ॐ भद्रं कर्णेभिः शृणुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तारक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Okay, so we are on verse 17 of the third prakarana, Advaita prakarana. Swasti siddhanta vyastasu. Swasti. Oops, sorry. I added something on my own. Okay. Swasiddhanta vyavastasu. Swasiddhanta vyavastasu. Dvaitino nischitadridham. Dvaitino nischitadridham. Parasparam virudyante. Parasparam virudyante. Tairayam na virudyate. Tairayam na virudyate. Swa siddhanta vyavastasu dvaitinaha nischitaha dhridam parasparam virujyante taihi ayam na virujyate. He's talking here about, in this section, let me just take a look there. He's moving into here. Really, the difference between a Dvaitin and an Advaitin. Dvaitin is a dualist, somebody who thinks that the nature of the reality is dual. An Advaitin is one who, following the Upanishads, as the Upanishad Pramana, that the nature of reality is Advaita, non-dual. And so, actually, the vision of the Shruti, the vision of the Upanishads, the vision of the Vedas, in fact, which are viewed as a pramana, which are viewed as a means of knowledge, you know, the vision of the Upanishads is one of Advaita, non-duality, one without a second, which would mean, really, that the conscious being that I am is the conscious being that you are, is the conscious being which is the self of the entire creation. Kind of like by when we say Advaita non-dual, meaning one without a second, it means that there, even though we're experiencing a manifestation of duality, this creation is certainly dual, right? But is its essential being dual? It's kind of like if you had a big a big block of clay, and in a big rectangular block of clay, an artist carved a very intricate scene in that block of clay. And that intricate scene, of course, would be dual. There would be so many things. Maybe it's in India, there's bullock carts and tons of people, you know, tons of people in the sky. And it's just a whole scenery, even a city scene. So we'd say that is certainly dual. But essentially, in actuality, there's only one conscious being, equals clay. There's only one clay there. That's Advaita. That's what we mean by non-dual. And so this whole dual creation is dual, true enough, in terms of your sense organs, your sense perception. It's just an infinite display of duality. But what is it that is actually here is one non-dual conscious being, which on the deepest level is the conscious being which I am. When I say the deepest level, I take this me, this very simple, beautiful me, to be this body. But that's not on the deepest level. The body is Maya. It's something that's objectified. The sense organs are objectified. There's a subject-object relationship with them. And so when I have to get to that innermost self that we call the Pratyagatma, that Atma, the conscious being, which is innermost, which you can't objectify, you can only be. That's the key. You can't objectify consciousness, you are consciousness. And because you are consciousness, you are self-evident, because consciousness is consciousness. You don't need to bring in another consciousness to illumine consciousness, right? And so consciousness, the conscious being that you are, also is not something objectifiable, which can be touched by other things, right? If I can object, in this creation, everything is objectifiable. Like, this body is objectifiable, the table is objectifiable, the chair is objectifiable. There's subject-object relationship, right? With everything that we perceive in the creation, there's difference. Like, this is different than this is different than this, and I am different from you in terms of this body. So all of these differences can affect each other. They can hurt each other. They can support each other. They can destroy each other. They themselves can fall apart and be destroyed because they're infinitely divisible. That's the nature of duality. But what about with conscious being, which is not an object to be viewed? I can't objectify me, the consciousness. I can objectify everything I've taken to be as me. The body, the mind, the sense organs, these are all objectifiable. They all exist within duality. But the bottom line, this innermost self, is the one that has no consciousness behind it to objectify it. It is consciousness. So this me is ever-present. It never changes because it can't change. It's not an object in the creation to be affected by one thing or another, or to even affect itself being made of parts, that type of thing. It's just pure conscious being. And that pure conscious being is the truth, like the clay of the bas-relief sculpture. That conscious being is the truth of every experience I have. Whether it's an experience through my sense organs, what does this experience enjoy? Conscious being. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is. And it is known. Every experience you have, it is, and it is known. And the isness is not objectifiable. In fact, this word isness, you know what it is? It's your amness. There's no isness. You make up that word. The only isness that you know is your own amness. And that amness is consciousness, sat-chit. And so now as you start to understand what they mean by Advaita, all of this, everything that you experience within duality, either mentally, emotionally, or sensory, through your sense perception or your memories, whatever it be, whatever experience that you have, that experience exists in and is pervaded by, it's both immanent and transcendent, and it exists in, is pervaded by, sat-chit, conscious being, the conscious being which I am. That's Advaita. That is non-duality. All of this duality that you experience has for its being the one non-dual consciousness, which must be me if it's non-dual. That's another nice little thing to understand. Non-dual conscious being is the conscious being which everything enjoys. The conscious being which the whole creation enjoys, including this body, mind, sense organs. So the conscious being, consciousness itself, being not objectifiable, it can't be many, it can only be one. The space is objectifiable, the creation is objectifiable. Consciousness isn't. Just to really understand this, think of when you have a dream. In the dream, there's the dream characters, there's the dream world, there's the dream sky, there's the dream space, there's the dream everything. It's a world. And you may be identified with a character in that dream world. But the whole dream world, including the space, everything is objectifiable. It comes into being, it is there, and it resolves. Into what? Into the conscious being, which it was there before, during, and after the dream. The conscious being, the me, that was there before, during, and after my imagination. The conscious being that was there before, during, and after every experience I have. And so what has to happen from the Vedic standpoint, from the Upanishads, is that we have to take the student step by step by step by step to recognize, to differentiate me, this pratyagatma, this innermost me, that you can never get rid of. You try. Every single thought that you have, every emotion that you have, every experience that you have, no exception, you can get rid of. You can replace it with another thought, with another emotion, with another feeling. In fact, you can't but replace it. It won't stay, even if you want it to. It is all temporal, all time-bound. There is only one thing that is not temporal, that is not time-bound, and that is your own presence, the one who is there as the conscious being, which is the self of every thought that you have. But that self is not coming and going like every thought that you have, like every experience that you have. That's the satya-mitya relationship. All of your experiences depend upon me, but I don't depend upon them. I don't come and go. So this is a great thing for you to recognize. It's a reality for you to recognize in terms of your experience. This isn't just a head trip. It's describing, these words are describing something for you to understand, but it's more than understand. To recognize, what is it about you that you can't get rid of? That you can't, no matter what, you can get rid of every thought, every emotion, every perception, but you know what? You are always there. Who is that? Right? So when we do these contemplations, we're bringing all of our experience, and when we do like the welcoming like we did today, we're welcoming all experience into that one that is always present. And that one, the Atma, the self, the Pratyagatma, is ever welcoming. It is never not welcoming. That's why when Swamiji says your heart has to be as big as Ishwara, right? Your heart has to be as big as Ishwara, because, in fact, the nature of your being never rejects anything. Never rejects. And so you can let your buddhi, you know, your intellect, your mind, the one who's gaining this knowledge, you can let it just welcome everything and see what happens. And then say you're one who's really hurt and angry at the one you're trying to welcome comes up and says, I'm not going to welcome that one. No way. You know? Then you welcome that one, that angry one. Then you welcome that one. Because that guy or that little one, that little person's too not ready to do any welcoming. That one. So you have to let them, okay, I welcome you. And then that welcoming gives that little one, I call it a little one because they're trying to mature over time, you know, trying to grow. That little one then, you're giving it the love and the environment it needs and the time it needs to work through whatever it needs to work through. So you welcome that, you know. It's very sweet. The world needs love. There's that beautiful song. You know what? The thing is it's so true. Your body needs love. Your mind needs love. Your buddhi, your intellect needs love. Your emotions need love. The little ones inside need love. The parts of you that are trying to grow, you know, trying to mature, that have this weakness and that weakness. They need love. They need somebody who's helping, you know. That's Swamiji's mantra, how can I help? So it's so beautiful. It's just like a little mantra. How can I help? You know, toward the world, you can, that's your, here you are in a situation, how can I help? Same thing internally. It's like another type of welcoming. If there's some part of you that's having some trouble, you know, some part that's hurting, or some part that's angry, you can go in and say, wow, how could you be angry? I'm working so hard trying to mature. You're not behaving correctly. And that just creates more pain. It would make such a difference, you know, if the attitude was, okay, how can I help? What should we do? How can I help you? What do we need to do that can help? You know? Then that part feels it has a friend, and then it can do, you know? So that welcome, that welcoming, is just a way of relaxing, allowing the mind and all parts of you to relax in the presence of your own nature, which by your own nature is absolutely welcoming. Conscious being, that yourself is the most welcoming thing that there is and can ever be. It would never, by its own nature, ever, there is nothing in it, in yourself, that is rejecting in any way. You're the most beautiful, most benign, most trustworthy being imaginable. Anything you bring up and bring to the self is just there and accepts it fully. Everything, in fact, is in one sense, there's one verse like this, everything is just an offering unto that self. Absolutely everything. Everything is an offering to the self because the self is the one, consciousness is the one who receives it all. Not as a knower, but as being itself. And so here, for the Vedantin, for the Advaitin, who recognizes, really there is nothing here that is not me. Just like if you have a dream, the whole dream is me. There's no part of it that's not me. In fact, you know, in Jungian analysis, for those therapists, when we do Jungian analysis, we look at the dream. Every part, this character who is, you know, running around with a knife screaming, that character is a part of myself. This character is a part of myself. This animal is a part of myself. Every single thing in the dream is a part of myself. We can look at the totality of our experience. Every single person, every single part of this experience is a part of myself. That's, in fact, the truth. And so that kind of that mantra of, okay, how can I help? You know? How can I be with you in a helpful way? Like you are with your own body, you know? Like I hurt my little thumb on a piece of glass today, you know? And so it hurt. So what did I do? Well, you know, I washed it. I washed it and I got, you know, some little ointment for it. You know, and I put the toilet paper around it to stop the bleeding, and then I put a little Band-Aid on it, you know. And then later I took it off and I washed it again and put some, you know. It's how can I help you, you know.
Baby.
Yeah, my little thumb. Because it was hurt, you know. So we have to just extend. We have to extend. And you can get a drishti. You can get it that in your mind to be that way. That's why contemplation is so important. You think about it in the morning. You make like a sankalpa, of how to approach the day. Contemplation is very beautiful for that. How to approach the day today? How to approach my mind today? How to be with others today? How to be with the difficult parts in myself today. You know? And that becomes, believe me, all of the little ones inside will be so happy. Your mind will be so happy because what happens is the mind and the parts that are having a tough time and that are trying to grow and deal with the world that where there's reactions taking place, it'll feel, your mind will feel, there's somebody inside who cares about me. You know? I have a friend inside. It's huge. If you feel the presence inside of, it's like you're the mind divides itself up. It's like the intellect divides up and it takes a stance. And the stance that it can take is one of being a friend who wants to help. And then your whole being relaxes. Just relaxes because instead of having an enemy or a critic inside or somebody who's just never happy with you, if nothing you do is ever good enough, you know, you're just not up to the mark. Just continual critic. Instead, there's somebody who's there who's supporting you, who loves you, who respects you, who knows you can do it, who gives you the benefit of the doubt. Which is really like Swamiji. That's the most fantastic wonder about Swamiji, is that he thinks you're great. He gives you the benefit of the doubt. He thinks you're just a wonderful person. Yeah, but he's not kidding. And so when somebody thinks you're just really a great person, that you're a wonderful person, and then if you have a problem, then for him, well, let's see, what can we do to help with this problem? You are a wonderful person. You are a great, beautiful person. And you have this problem that you're working on, so let's work on that. It has nothing to do with who you are. See what I mean? It's just so freeing inside. You feel so free because you feel cared for and loved. So if you evoke that person in yourself, then you feel internally cared for and loved. It's very beautiful. So that is really the stance of an Advaitin, somebody who recognizes the whole vision of the Upanishads, of who I am, who Ishvara is, what the world is. But he says now, there are many different schools of thought that Gaudapada here is going to be dealing with, different darshans, different schools of thought. And he's just right now dividing them into one big one called Dvaitins. Those who believe in one way or another that the nature of reality is dual. So one way to think about this is that when we're talking about Dvaitins, where really these are called Purvapaksha Siddhantas, they're bringing up objections that may be a darshana, it may be a philosophical system, but it's also your own questions. The Dvaitin in you, right? And so we're bringing up these Dvaitins, these dualists, and the type of problems that we have if we're accepting the reality of duality. So that's what he's talking about now. So let's go into that just for a minute. He says, someone who has a philosophical position where they believe, their belief, where they have their philosophical conclusion, you know, what we call the Dvaitinaha means the Dvaitins, plural, nischita dridam. They have a firm conviction. So this one who's a Dvaitin, who has this as a philosophical position, they have a very firm conviction and faith in the vyavastas, in the particular methodologies which swasiddhanta, which establish their own position. This word vyavastha, let me talk a little bit about this. The word avastha, and avastha is a state or a position. Yeah. Like a state of being, avastha is it like a state of being, but it's also like a position. A vyavastha is a particular position. So here it's when we talk about a particular position, it's the logical methodologies, the logics that they are using to establish their position, swa-siddhanta, their own position. So these Dvaitins have a firm conviction in their own logical thinking, which establishes to them their own siddhanta. The siddhanta is their philosophical position. So just to make this is a technical word, if I have two words, purvapaksha and siddhanta, okay? In debate, in any kind of debate or discussion, the purvapaksha is the previous position, the first position. It would be the objection. So the purvapaksha would be the objection to my position. So they have a purvapaksha comes, and then I give the siddhanta. The siddhanta would be how I answer that position, right? So my siddhanta would be what the vision of the Upanishads would be, the siddhanta. So somebody comes up with a purvapaksha, an objection, and then my answer to that would be the siddhanta, okay? So here when they say swa siddhanta, their own siddhanta, their own position, so vyavastasu, in the logics and methodologies that they use to establish their own position. Swa siddhanta vivastasu. The Dvaitins, the dualists, they are firmly they're firmly committed to this, to these logics. Okay. Now, these Dvaitins, who are each of these different types of having these different dualistic positions, they're each committed to their own position, and so they are parasparam virujante. They're continually going to be arguing with each other. They're going to be at odds with each other. Now, they have to be at odds with each other unless their position is the same. Right? Because duality is infinite. You can have an infinite number of positions. And so if this person believes this, either this guy believes what this person believes, or they believe their own thing. How many different beliefs can you have in a dual world? Right? It's actually countless. You know, the Jains, who are actually non-Vedic, they're Gnostica Darshana, but they have something very beautiful in their philosophy, and that is something that goes something like this. Anything they take, any position they have, they say something like, with that, whatever that position is, well, they say something like, so it seems. Because what they realize that within this duality, every position that you take has literally an infinite number of other positions that you could take. Right? There's no end to it. Because any position can be viewed from literally an infinite number of ways. And so say you have carved out a position, a full philosophical system around this world, accepting duality as real. Right? That's only your one. You should say, you should become a Jain and say, as so it seems. Because then that would say, and I realize that there are an infinite number of positions that other people can have. But instead, the darshanas tend to be very firmly rooted in their own belief system that they have constructed. We say, they have constructed, this is important, that they have constructed because they have no pramana for it. There are no means of knowledge that they can use for it. Any means of knowledge, once you get into the nature of reality, into the whole universe, you have no real means of knowledge that can accommodate that level of inquiry. What this means is that we will run up against the epistemological limits that we have for every single pramana that we use. So that's a big discussion. We started that in Vedanta Sara or in actually the Vishnu Sahasranama on Saturday. So we'll just put that aside. No, that's a huge, great, big thing that it exists there. It's something very important for us to discuss. But so here, just know that's there. So here, what they say, these Dvaitins, they are parasparam, means mutually with each other. Virujite, they're conflicting with each other all of the time, disagreeing with each other all of the time. Because either they take that one position or they're going to be in conflict. That's just the nature of it. But he says, Taihi ayam na virujite, but this Advaita, ayam Advaitaha, the vision of the Upanishads, is not na virujite, it's not conflicted with any of them. There is no conflict at all. And the reason there's no conflict, non-conflict, is because whatever position they take, I am the self of that position. Every position. Doesn't matter what it is. I am the self, I am the very truth, the very being of all of those positions. And within duality, I see how they all conflict with one another. I accept the infinite conflict, and I also accept that I am the one non-dual self of the whole thing. Right? And so, from the standpoint of Advaita non-duality, there can be no conflict because there's nothing that is away from the truth of the names and forms or the projection that is warring with each other. It's like, to really understand, just to give it an example, if I'm having a dream, let's make it a lucid dream to get rid of the ajnana, but say I'm having a dream, and in the dream, there are all these Dvaitins arguing with each other. Okay? And that's correct. They're all arguing with each other. They are all taking a given standpoint, and also each standpoint they take is negated by another darshana, by another. So that's a reality. I see that very clearly. I see how they're all arguing with each other, and that's absolutely fine with me. Why? Because they're within duality, but the nature of that duality is mithya, right? Within mithya, there are an infinite number of positions you can take, and each conflicts with the other, but they are mithya. Mithya means that they depend, the dream itself, the whole depends solely upon me. I am its truth. I am the conscious being which that whole dream enjoys. It's like the clay block. There's only clay there. But the dream also, there's only me there. I am the Satchit. I am the conscious being which is the truth of the whole dream. I am the one from whom the dream has come. I am the one who sustains the dream. I am the one in whom the dream resolves. And so I totally understand all of these positions. I understand where they're coming from. I understand why they conflict with each other. I have no problem at all with any of them. And I welcome them all. There is nothing to push away. Because I'm as much the self of this position, of that position, of this position. But for me, all of those positions, I understand them all. They're all mithya. It's also kind of like saying to understand, you know, the 10 blind men who are feeling the elephant? Mm-hmm. That's a famous story. It's been used by many different darshanas, actually used this story. But say there's 10 blind men, and each one is feeling the elephant, but they're all scattered around the elephant. So one's feeling the leg, and one's patting the side, and one's feeling an ear, and one's feeling a trunk, and one's feeling a tail. And so they're all talking about what the elephant really looks like. Well, it's a flat, big, broad surface. It's a big stump-like leg. You know? All of the descriptions are very, very different. But the one who sees the whole elephant understands, yes, this blind Dwaitin, right, is describing the leg of the elephant. Yes, this one, he's correct. He's describing the tail. That's right. He thinks it's the elephant, but he's actually, what he's describing is a part of the elephant. It's the tail. See what I mean? So a Dwaitin views it like that because there's nothing to be rejected here. There is no Advaita to reject. There's no such thing as Dwaita. Dwaita duality is mithya. It has no independent being. I am its very self. So for the Dwaitin, no problem at all. So we'll start this and then I'll take me another class to do it. Verse 18. Advaitam paramartho hi, advaitam paramartho hi, dvaitam tadbheda uchyate, dvaitam tadbheda uchyate, tesham upayata dvaitam, tesham upayata dvaitam, tenayam na virudhyate, tenayam na virudhyate. So advaitam paramartha hi dvaitam tad bedaha uchate tesham ubhayata dvaitam tena ayam na virujyate. He says the dvaita, advaita, non-duality is paramartha. Paramartha, when they say that, means the app is absolute. It's the absolute reality. We use this word, usually when we say paramartha, means absolute, paramarthika, like paramarthika satyam. That reality which is the truth is absolute. And what they mean by absolute reality or absolute truth or that which is ultimate is that which can never be negated. Paramarthika satyam, if we say, is that being, the existence, the truth, which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. Nothing can be done to it. It's an absolute reality. So the Advaitam is the absolute. Non-duality is the Paramartha. He, because Dvaitam, what we call duality, tad vedaha uchate. What we call duality, that is dvaitam, is said to be, what is dual, is said to be vedaha, means said to be something that comes from that, is a division of that. Right? So, like, if you have one, two will come out of that. Right? So, this world has to come from something. Right? So, dvaita comes from something, it has to come from the advaita. The question is, how does it come from it? How does it come? Right? So, once you have veda, veda means a division. What's there before the division? Advaita, abheda, right? And so now the question is, from what is ultimately abheda, advaita, not non-dual, this duality comes. So the question is, in what way does it come? So he says, tesham ubhayata dvaitam. For them, means the dvaitins, dvaita, Shankara said, they lose in both ways. For them, because they believe in dvaita, the paramartha, the advaita, paramartha itself has to be dvaita. There cannot be no advaita anywhere for them, because if one part of dvaita, of the duality, is real, the other part must be real. Like, say, it's not just... So try get this. Like here, say we say this duality that we're experiencing here, this is the reality. The reality of creation, the reality of the world is dual. That means all of this duality that we experience, this is real. Okay? That means the birth and death, the being that you have, the being that you think you have is a temporal being. There is no being really. There's just temporality. There's the duality that you experience, the birth and death you experience, that's what's happening. There's coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. So we all accept this world is dual. Okay, the Advaitin will say, yes, this world is dual. This Vyavahara that we experience is dual. But the Dvaitin will say, this duality that we all experience, whether Dvaitin or Advaitin, is real. Right? There is nothing beyond this duality. And then say, it says, then we say, well, where does this duality come from? Well, it comes from the self, or say you say it comes from, like say if you're Sankhya, you would say it comes from the prakriti. And what is that prakriti? That itself is dual. That means the substance itself from which it comes has got to be dual, if the duality is real. So just look, prakriti is a good example in the Sankhya Yoga. Say if you take prakriti, and they look at prakriti as the material cause for the manifestation of this creation. And they take prakriti, which is the material cause of this creation, you know, to be dual. Because if it weren't dual, how could it become the creation? So what is the absolute or the material cause of the creation is dual, and this creation that we experience is dual. Because if this is real, then its cause must also be dual. Because if this is real, this duality that we experience is real, then the material cause of it, real means that the duality is real, then the material cause of the duality must also be real. See what I mean? And that material cause must be dual. Does this make sense? Okay, good. Now, on both ends, they lose. I consider it a loss. On both ends, it's dual. The material cause must be dual, and the creation must be dual. Because if this dual creation is real, then its cause must also be dual. See what I mean? Because the cause can't be ultimately non-dual. If the cause is non-dual, then what is non-dual can't create anything. Right? It can't become dual. Because it's non-dual. Non-dual means one without a second. One without a second means it has no parts. Something that has no parts can all of a sudden sprout parts. Right? And it's not objectifiable. It has no parts. You know, it's not subject. It's not objectifiable. It's not subject to time. It simply is, and it is non-dual. That which is and is non-dual can't give birth to anything. And so that's why this whole creation from a Vedanta standpoint is mithya. It's maya. And maya, you can say maya belongs to Brahman, to non-dual Brahman, non-dual consciousness, but only as an incidental attribute. Yama iti maya, that which is not, that is maya. Incidental attribute, mithya, means that maya can't be categorized as being real or being non-existent. It's something which enjoys the set-chit of consciousness without bringing about any change of it. Now, to understand, think about a thought. I'll ask you right now to project a beautiful meadow with trees and sun and clouds, green grass and people walking through it. Maya. And that's maya. The order of reality it enjoys is mithya. It means it is there, it is three-dimensional, it is beautiful, you can get lost in it. You know, it's a beautiful, your daydream, right? But this beautiful daydream that we call the maya daydream, it's not away from me. I have that maya capacity, it's really part of consciousness, but it doesn't touch consciousness or change conscious being in any way. Right? I remain exactly the same. That is the relationship that conscious being has with this creation. This creation is mithya. Dvaitin, duality, is not real in this sense. We have to understand what we mean by real. Real means that which exists in all three periods of time, that which cannot be negated by past, present, or future. Nothing in this creation enjoys that stature. Everything in this creation, this is the important part, everything in this creation comes into being and goes out of being. Nothing that has being can come from non-being. Right? So being is. Right? Non-being isn't there. Nothing can come from it. This whole creation is being. Not as an object, but as the very satchit, the very upadana karana, the very material cause that is here. And it is the self of all of this. But it never changes. And all of this comes into being and goes out of being, into being, goes out of being, because it's mithya, it's maya. And that maya is intrinsic as an incidental attribute to consciousness. Means it is there, it's responsible for the cyclical projection of the creation, but itself doesn't bring about any change to consciousness. It's the vivarta upadana karana. Means it's the material cause that is vivarta. It goes through no change at all to become the creation. That's why we bring in maya here. So he says that because of this, because the... With that, dvaita, which is dvaita on all respects, paramartika, and in terms of the material cause and the creation, with that we have we don't reject it at all. We don't reject the dvaita. You know, we don't have any problem with the dvaita. You know, we just say it's maya, it's mithya. That the Advaita, the non-dual, can never become dual. If it's non-dual, you know, before the first Veda, right? If it was non-dual before the first Veda, before the first division, it can never become dual, because it was non-dual. Right? If it's not non-dual, then it can manifest as this way or that way. And it can change. But if it's non-dual, it can never manifest or become dual. We'll get into it quite a bit more next week. It'll take too long to really... You have to work. Yeah, there's a lot in there, so let's do it later. We'll do it next week. swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishah go brahmane bhyashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam kshobha rahitah brahmanah santu nirbhayah om sarve bhavantu sukhinah sarve santu niramayah sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritam gamaya om purnamadav purnamidam purnat purnamudachate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vashishyate om shanti 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 hari om shri guru pyo namaha hari om